If you have smart surveillance cameras in or around your home, there are a lot of things going on in the background that you may not even realize. Not only are you constantly feeding data to a server that law enforcement can use as evidence against you, but many surveillance companies partner with insurance companies to streamline the process of letting them spy on you. I made an app that can log network activity and data from a smart camera just by being in the vicinity of your home, and it can tell me not only when and where activity is taking place, but when you're viewing the camera feeds. I even released a version that you can try yourself.
And we'll be doing some weird side channel hacking, like spying on Ring camera microphones and sending radio signals to the speaker wire, which, ironically enough, produces ultrasonic frequencies that can jam other smart recording devices. And naturally, we'll be going over the history of in-home surveillance, from radio collars worn by domestic abuse survivors to Shark Tank, all the way to a CEO declaring war on crime and sending his employees camouflage clothing, and hiring Shaq to hang out with him for some reason. In 1966, a nurse by the name of Marie Van Britten Brown felt unsafe returning from work to her Queens apartment at odd hours. She had an idea: a motorized camera and two-way intercom system wired to a doorbell that featured a panic button that could call police. Her husband was an electronics technician and helped her make a prototype, and they bought a patent that was approved in 1969. While she allegedly lived modestly until 1999, over 30 home security patents reference her work without paying royalties.
Women's rights have a pretty rocky history with home security. In the 1990s, ADT launched a program that gifted ADT-branded radio collars to survivors of domestic abuse. If the woman felt as if she was in immediate danger, that her partner or spouse would harm her again, she could just press the ADT panic button, and that would send a radio signal up to 200 feet away to the base station that is connected to the house's phone line. Really inspiring stuff.
And since abusers now frequently use security cameras like Ring to monitor their victims and subject them to coercive control, ADT now offers an app called So Secure, which is only $8.99 a month for the premium membership. It uses widgets and secret voice commands so women can attempt to discreetly notify an ADT agent that they're in danger without making it too obvious to the abuser watching their every move through the Ring cameras. Oh, and there's also a Track Me timer, which tracks a woman's location and requires them to check in before notifying ADT to call emergency responders on their behalf. You know, after learning all this, I frankly don't understand what women have to complain about. Between 2006 and 2011, self-described serial entrepreneur Jamie Siminoff was very busy with his six startups, including PhoneTag and Unsubscribe.com, but he cashed out and started a company called DoorBot. In December of 2012, he more covertly started another company called Christie Street that was a Kickstarter competitor. And as luck would have it, his crowdfunding company featured his smart doorbell on the homepage. And just a few months after that, Jamie got the opportunity to propose his vision for DoorBot to some of our world's most prestigious economists.
Join me, and the next time you hear, it'll be...
You're dead to me.
Not long after DoorBot launched, it rebranded to Ring. Google purchased Dropcam and added home surveillance cameras to its Nest line of products. Netgear bought UboxCam and launched Arlo. And about 4 years after the Blink Kickstarter campaign was funded in 2014, Amazon purchased the company. Many of the original backers still haven't received their cameras. It was basically a gigantic race between a bunch of companies that have utterly no experience in the surveillance industry. Back in 2014, it was relatively unheard of to have a security camera inside your home, and the few families that did were limited to things like baby monitors. These days, one-third of American households have voluntarily installed surveillance cameras inside their home that connect to a third-party cloud service, and nearly two-thirds of households have outdoor cameras. And the vast majority of these camera owners have a very poor understanding of who may be able to watch the footage coming from them. Stay tuned, we'll be right back after some smart camera hacking instructions. We keep seeing these news stories about criminals using jammers to scramble and bypass doorbell cameras, and I'm pretty familiar with jamming myself, and while a little part of me gets excited to think that a teenager who spends their time stealing packages from their neighbor's porch is accidentally becoming enthusiastic about RF and cybersecurity, I also want to strongly discourage them from using jammers. Porch piracy confuses me because it has such an out-of-whack risk-reward ratio. Like, out of all the packages that I receive in any given month, maybe three of them have anything that a pawn shop would even be interested in, but okay, let's assume that you're okay with that risk-reward ratio and you get caught, you're probably going to get probation on your first offense. Now, if you use a jammer on a doorbell camera, that's a federal crime and the feds will pull up. And that's like a $100,000 fine and a year in prison on your first offense. There's kind of a good reason for it. Jammers can disrupt things like emergency services and GPS signals. Like, people could die as a result of you using a jammer. And even if you're a sociopath and you don't care about any of those things, jammers aren't cheap. They cost like a few hundred bucks at least. What you want to do is de-auth the doorbell camera, but don't actually
the Auth the Doorbell camera.
The standard WPA2 encryption that most routers come with has a lot of flaws, and flawed devices only exasperate the flaws in the router. Basically, I could send a vulnerable internet-connected device a command saying that it's been kicked off of the network. Some devices these days are smart enough to only accept this command from the router it's connected to, but none of my Ring cameras seem to care where that deauth signal had come from. You can send a deauth signal from any laptop with a decent Wi-Fi interface. Some phones or even smartwatches can be modified to do it. Inexpensive and fun M5 stack devices can certainly do it, and even dirt cheap ESP32 boards can send targeted deauthorization attacks. It is illegal, and genuinely an asshole thing to do to anyone without their consent, but machine gunning a Ring camera with deauth signals does indeed stop it from sending image data to Amazon servers. A Ring camera will always try to reconnect to a Wi-Fi network after it's deauthed. A WPA2 network will send the camera a handshake asking for the password, and in this process, you can easily download that handshake and sic a powerful GPU on the encryption locally. To demonstrate this, I set up a brand new TP-Link router with the default unique Wi-Fi password that came on a sticker in the package, and then I registered a Ring camera to that network and deauthed it. I was able to crack the password in Go. Done. Yeah, not great. So even if I'm not concerned with obfuscating the camera signal itself, if I wanted to maliciously break into a Wi-Fi network that had the most common type of encryption, seeing a Ring camera on that network would be a stroke of luck that would make that task a lot easier. There are some ways that you could protect yourself against this. Some work better than others. You could try to enable WPA3 encryption on your router and find out how many of your older devices will not connect to your router anymore. Or you could try a type of enterprise encryption that sends a different key to each device that connects to your Wi-Fi network. Good luck keeping track of those. I'll give you some more ideas later in this video. There seems to be a phenomenon where if you're a white dude with an unfathomable amount of wealth, you see movies like Iron Man or The Dark Knight, not as comic-based action movies based on fictional universes, but an idea board for the next chapter of your life. Unfortunately, the person who put cameras in and around everyone's home also has shown symptoms of this particular type of psychosis. Within a few short years of pitching
caller ID for your front door,
Jamie Siminoff sent emails to his employees quite literally declaring a war on crime. They stated that Ring was going to war with anyone who wants to harm a neighborhood, which is interesting because a few months ago when visiting neighborhoods severely harmed by data centers, I didn't see any Ring troops with feet on the ground. Jamie went on to directly address criminals by indirectly emailing all of his employees.
To the dirtbag criminals that steal our packages and rob our houses, your time is numbered because Ring is officially declaring war on you.
He then sent his employees camouflage shirts with the Ring logo on them, I suppose because he expected this war on porch pirates to take place in Panama or something. From the leaked emails I've seen, it appears that there were actually multiple Ring wars, which Jamie would abbreviate with RW1, RW2, and so on. RW3 was a battle against ADT, I assume because they were competitors. I didn't really go to business school, so I'm not really sure how the militarization of an IP camera company is organized. I assume that, much like Flock Safety, Ring realized that there's a whole lot of money to be made by wedging themselves in between law enforcement agencies and their own communities. The loud and performative anti-crime obsession operates as a great distraction for both the potential violation of Fourth Amendment rights and the amount of money that those violations will cost taxpayers. If a company like Flock or Ring is working with your local government and you're not interested in Flock or Ring's products, then you'll be buying them anyway with your property taxes. Right around the time that RW1 was declared, the company started cozying up to law enforcement. They hosted lavish events for police with free dinner and open bar, giving every attendee a bunch of free Ring cameras that they were encouraged to use with their department or community. Also worth mentioning, many of these events featured Shaquille O'Neal, and the CEO seemed to hire Shaq to hang out with him quite a bit.
We've given away over $1 million worth of stuff. We've gone into neighborhoods, actually personally, both of us, done it together, installed them on people's houses that have had crime issues and crime-ridden areas. And so doing that kind of stuff.
All of this accompanied the launch of the Ring Neighbors app, which more or less combined the cameras with a social media network. But the app that people living in these neighborhoods didn't usually see or even know existed was the police access portal, where law enforcement could utilize the data volunteered through the Neighbors app to cross-reference with police reports and criminal records.
Welcome to Ring Neighborhoods. Neighborhoods Portal, a community-supported crime-fighting tool for law enforcement. You can enter an address and time frame of interest and see a map of active cameras in your chosen area and time. No more going door-to-door to look for cameras and asking for footage. When you select a case, you see a map and timeline of available videos and captured security events related to that case. In future versions, we will also be enabling Ring's smart search functionality that will allow for suspicious activity detection and person recognition.
That may not even sound that problematic if you've never spent time on apps like Neighbors or Nextdoor, but within a couple of minutes of it, you'll get a really good understanding of why the Constitution is a thing. As a company scaled in the direction of government surveillance, customers and journalists started taking note. When Amazon acquired Ring in 2018 for $1.1 billion, the war declarations and edgy language seemed to simmer down a notch, but the company continued to comply with subpoenas and give customer data and footage to police without requiring a warrant or the customer's consent. After the pandemic and the George Floyd protests, worried that privacy concerns would harm sales, Amazon carefully took a step back from its direct relationship with police. Jamie Siminoff stepped down from his CEO position, and by January 2024, Ring stopped allowing police to request data from the Neighbors app entirely. This was seen as a big win by privacy advocates and customers alike, but Ring wasn't giving up on this strategy. They were seemingly just removing themselves from the controversy regarding it. Instead of directly providing law enforcement with an interface to download customer data, they would partner with companies that were in the business of aggregating and selling data to the government, like Axon and Flock Safety. Jamie Siminoff stepped back into Ring leadership, and it wouldn't be long before his employees got his controversial emails again, this time using an emotional reference to Charlie Kirk's murder to highlight how important it was to roll out another community request tool for police. And not long after that, this happened.
One post of a dog's photo in the Ring app starts outdoor cameras looking for a match. Search Party from Ring uses AI to help families find lost dogs.
Available to everyone.
A lot of people weighed in after seeing that Super Bowl ad, worried about privacy.
Still, the ad is enough for some people to turn away from the company altogether.
They want nothing to do with this technology.
The plan to use people's love of their pets as a way to roll out and introduce an invasive technology backfired, to say the least. Channels like this one have been pleading with people to defend their right to privacy for a really long time, and somehow Ring accomplished this in under 30 seconds. People of all demographics and political leanings and walks of life saw this ad, looked at the Ring camera, and said, wait, what if they tracked me this way? And they weren't paranoid for thinking this at all. In emails obtained by 404 Media, Jamie Siminoff proudly said that the searchlight feature is first for finding dogs, insinuating that it will expand to other subjects. And all of this is happening as Ring is rolling out its facial recognition features. This is just my opinion, but it seems to me that it is very much within Ring's interest to distance themselves from government-related privacy concerns. After all, they're selling you the cameras that could be used against you, and you're paying them a monthly fee to keep them working with these features. They need to appear as your friend. And that's probably why their partnership with Flock Safety was terminated shortly after that controversial ad aired. But there is nothing that suggests that ending the Flock partnership ends the community requests program or Ring's posture regarding working with law enforcement. I am so obsessed with Tempest attacks or radio side channel attacks, which I've demonstrated in a previous video on Flock Safety cameras. Modern smart home cameras have a microphone and speaker, so you can talk to the person you're creepily watching or hear their response. But these components are really, really small, which means that they're not shielded very well. In some cases, you can also access the inverted information hitting a speaker and use it as a microphone, which you may have experienced when plugging your headphones into the microphone port on your computer. Using a combination of high-end software-defined radios, I was able to find the Ring camera's microphone input in high-frequency RF leakage. I recorded the IQ files, which is pretty much the same process as recording an audio wave file, but with like 1,000 times more information.
Like there's a setting where you tell the app that you're home and then it doesn't record you, but I don't have evidence yet. Now, I haven't demodulated the voice, but it appears to be picking up sound. See that?
Then, after setting up some custom filters in GNU Radio, I set up a decimation pipeline to convert the PDM data to PCM, and was able to make out some faint audio information. I would not personally call this a vulnerability of any sort. It's more like a fun boot camp to learn about radio's relationship with computer science.
What was way more interesting was testing the speaker.
No, we're at 45K.
And realizing, for whatever accidental reason, it plays audio well into the ultrasonic range, which means that it technically could qualify as a weak audio jamming device if someone were committed enough. I did have an idea, which may have just been procrastination at this depth, but have you ever randomly heard a radio signal come out of a guitar amp or a speaker system? That's usually because the length of the input cable is behaving as an antenna. And this can easily be calculated.
You have your frequency in gigahertz equals 300 antenna millimeter.
I'm not even aware of a software-defined radio that can transmit anything above 10 gigahertz, so I spent a lot of time shooting high-amplitude RF signals at an eighth of the resonant frequency of the speaker wire. But for one fantastic fleeting moment at like 4 in the morning, I did make it work.
And now you know that through an expensive and completely impractical process, this particular model of Ring camera can be transformed into an extremely shitty music speaker or ultrasonic transmitter. Rigging your house full of surveillance cameras does not come without consequence, and very few people know about these consequences until they find out about them the hard way. For example, when you signed your homeowner's or renter's insurance policy that you certainly didn't read, you likely agreed to a duty to cooperate clause. So if your car gets stolen out of your driveway, your insurance company can demand access to the footage, and if you don't hand it over, they can deny your claim. And when you do hand over that footage, your insurance company will scour the footage looking for comparative negligence, like an open window, or the lights not flashing to indicate that you locked your car. And they'll use that to reduce or deny your claim. Also, if you disclose to your insurance company that you have a surveillance system when you sign the policy agreement and one of your cameras happened to run out of batteries or had a fogged up lens, recent legal trends across the US are granting them the right to deny that claim entirely. Most major insurance companies offer a safety rewards or smart home discount program. And when you sign up for these, they're likely receiving monthly or even real-time telemetry data and connectivity reports directly from your camera's vendor. For example, insurance companies can connect to Ring or Nest via API for this data, and more recently, security vendors are partnering to streamline this even more. This data is collected not only for the purpose of supplying reasons to deny claims, but to find new reasons to increase the price of your premiums. This has been so valuable to insurance companies that they've started giving away smart devices to their customers. So you may not even realize that one of your security cameras has run out of batteries or is not functioning properly, but chances are that your insurance company does. If you happen to, for example, sprain your ankle at work, your employer's insurance company may also issue a request for production that demands all surveillance video from your home to see if you're actually injured. They even run AI gait analysis on this footage. So in this example, let's say your kitchen trash can is overflowing and you decide to push through the pane and take the garbage out. That could work against your claim in some cases and build a narrative accusing you of fraud. What's even weirder is canvassing. If you have a camera pointed at your neighbor's house, you may get a visit from their insurer's private investigator ambiguously requesting footage to help with an investigation. If you say no, you may get certified mail with a preservation letter, which puts you in a position where if you don't archive the requested footage, you can be liable for a civil suit. There are some recent cases in Texas and Florida that cleared the path for prosecutors to use the act of disabling your own security cameras as evidence to, for example, turn a self-defense investigation into a premeditated murder charge. So in some states, if you were to turn off your Ring or Nest cameras because you felt like enjoying an afternoon with some privacy and you forgot to call time out and turn them back on before defending yourself from somebody attacking you with a baseball bat, that historical device health data will be accessed with or without your consent and used to incriminate you. In a perfect world, where the high road prevails and the bad guys are always served a cold dish of justice, it's arguably handy to have a bunch of cameras monitoring everything happening around your home. But we don't live in that perfect world. We live in a world where every single one of the companies involved will stop at nothing to make as much money as possible. If you ask nicely and wait a few days, Ring is obligated to give you the data about you that they're harvesting, storing, and potentially sharing. In my case, this includes, but is absolutely not limited to, every single time that I got a notification, every single time that I looked at the app, what device or type of Wi-Fi or cellular connection I used to look at the app. It logged every time that a Ring device had low battery or powered down. It logged every single alert, every single time motion was detected, and every single time that their AI thought that the motion was a human and the precise time and location of those events. Then all the usual stuff like my email, GPS coordinates of devices, phone number, address, and details about the subscription. But the problem is, even without video footage, when you analyze this data, it can draw a complete picture of your schedule, habits, and general lifestyle. And when you sign up for services like this, you're almost certainly consenting to the company being able to share the data where it can be combined with everything from the things that you're looking at on Amazon to the telemetry data from your car to the porn site searches Meta tracked from you. A lot of controversy surrounding Ring has been regarding the data being accessed by law enforcement through their Neighbors program and now defunct partnership with Flock Safety. And my cameras have received over 250 CMM content requests, which I'm assuming is their community features asking for this data. I've asked Ring to clarify, and they didn't have an answer for me. We've reached this critical point where a tech-savvy investigator can find enough evidence to build a case by monitoring that same information the insurance companies are buying, whether that's done legitimately or through a data breach. But what's even more alarming is the amount of privacy invasion that can be accomplished just by passively sniffing Wi-Fi and Bluetooth frequencies. Let's try it. I made a few different apps to demonstrate this. The first is Monitoring. Get it? Monitoring. I'll see myself out. I put monitoring on GitHub if you want to try for yourself with your own camera and network so you can see your activity. If you have a decent router, you can capture PCAP data, which is basically the only way to see every single thing being sent over your network in any given time frame. And when I say see, you'll be seeing general things like this. Sometimes you'll see some recognizable words or addresses, but in the case of a Nest or Ring camera, it'll mostly be encrypted gobbledygook. But many of these cameras have a flaw that's really difficult to avoid. Let's say you're using a Ring camera as a baby monitor. Every time it detects movement, it'll be capturing video and sending it to the cloud, and depending on your preferences, alerting you. Even if that data is encrypted, it still has a heuristic fingerprint. This means that once that fingerprint is identified, you can see every single time that a particular camera was detecting movement. If you do this throughout a home with a bunch of cloud-connected cameras, you can build a profile of what the people inside are doing and where they're doing it. Monitoring isn't a hacking tool or an exploit. It's a simplified way to visualize your own heuristic data from your own secure network. It shows you what my other, much more nefarious app can see. Cochlea is so much creepier. I made a version that can run on a Raspberry Pi with an external Wi-Fi adapter and one that can run on a rooted Android phone. It can analyze this same heuristic data without needing data from the router. You don't even need to have access to the Wi-Fi network. It passively performs a side-channel attack by scanning for Ring cameras and letting you select the ones that you want to monitor. Then, every single time that movement is detected and video is transmitted to the Amazon cloud servers, the app lets you know. And if you just want to leave it on all day, it'll give you a CSV report of every single camera's activity, as well as when it suspected that the camera's owner was looking at the feed. This could tell somebody parked out in the street when you're home or at work, or when you're home alone. I will not be releasing Cochlea, and I likely won't even run it again. But the reason I made the app is to demonstrate that it is absolutely possible, and therefore probably being used in some nefarious way somewhere by the government, stalkers, or companies that want your data for some profitable reason. I say that like those are three different things. There are these blind spots in research that often exist in the shadow of cherry-picking data. And what I mean by this is that it's very likely that companies like Ring and ADT and so on have funded studies into the efficacy of surveillance cameras, but didn't get the results they were hoping for, so it was never published. This may explain why, surprisingly, there hasn't been any independent qualified research published that suggests that a smart camera on your property deters crime, especially when these cameras are present in 2 out of 3 homes. There is, however, a 15-year-old meta-analysis on criminology research that highlights how cameras lack any statistically significant impact on crime at all. Now, of course, if you just type this into Google, you'll see stats pulled from the depths of CCTV security pro's asshole. And you'll find lots of home security companies citing the studies conducted in another vendor's imagination. So let's pretend that you're a criminal, and you're targeting a specific home for whatever reason. You'll just wear a mask when you see a camera. But if you're scoping a neighborhood looking for a house to rob, do you want to rob the house with no screens and stacks of tires in the driveway? Or do you want to rob the house with a bunch of expensive cameras guarding the valuables inside? I did manage to find one really good study on home security, and it was about dogs deterring crime and the link between socioeconomic conditions and dog ownership. The presence of dogs significantly reduces crime in neighborhoods, and on face value that makes sense, because if someone steps on my property, my dogs loudly let everybody within a square mile know about it. But the actual crime deterrence is not necessarily for the reasons that you think. For example, I like to believe that most dog owners walk their dogs. And when you walk your dog, you're essentially patrolling your neighborhood. And in my neighborhood, I'd say that the vast majority of the people that I met because I wanted to know more about their dog or they wanted to know more about mine. That transforms strangers into neighbors. I don't know where I would even start to find and analyze data to figure out if cloud-connected home surveillance was more likely to help or harm you, but things are very rapidly trending in the wrong direction. I initially intended on building a self-hosted, encrypted alternative to cloud cameras for this video, but I don't really think that that's the right message either. Maybe you should just have a realistic discussion with your family members about the risks you've just heard about versus the odds that cameras would actually be useful to you. And by useful, I mean, if God forbid your house gets robbed and your doorbell camera records it, is that actually going to result in you getting your things back and your window repaired? Maybe instead of paying $200 a year for a cloud camera subscription, you could increase your homeowner's or renter's insurance to include replacement cost value. If you strongly believe that you need cameras to feel safe, there are plenty of models that write encrypted files directly to micro SD cards. You can just mount them up high, and should something happen where you'll need the footage, it's available just in a less convenient way. And if the government
demands footage from those cameras, they'll be shit out of luck unless you give them your encryption key. It's worth mentioning that some services like Ring allow you to enable end-to-end encryption on their platform, which supposedly means that even Ring can't access your footage if they receive a legal request to do so. But that is very different than simply encrypting a video to local storage, and it introduces a lot more transactions and question marks about what is being encrypted and when it's being encrypted and decrypted in the pipeline. That also means that if your phone is compromised, then your security certificate can be used to access the data. As previously demonstrated in this video, traffic data is revealing a lot of information about you, and that's not encrypted. And finally, when you enable end-to-end encryption on a Ring camera, you lose access to the smart features like person detection, notifications with previews, and browser access, which are some of the features that would make someone pay for a subscription to Ring as opposed to using a local storage solution. But if you ask me my opinion, with the way that we seem to be plunging into authoritarianism and considering the sad state of cybersecurity, I'd say that having a cloud-connected camera from a tech conglomerate makes you significantly less safe. And you know what happened last month? I spent a few hours complaining about Ring's terms of service changes on Amazon, and they agreed to refund every Ring product that I bought over the years. And now I'm sending them this box of old cameras in exchange for the original price I paid for them. I have no idea if they extended this olive branch out of the kindness of their heart, or maybe they couldn't deal with talking to me anymore, or there's some sort of legal reason, but if loss aversion is preventing you from taking these cameras down, it's worth trying to get a refund. Let's have a few more hacks for the road.
Howdy, y'all. This vulnerability concerned us enough to report to Ring's cybersecurity team under responsible disclosure guidelines. It has not been verified or completely researched yet, so Ben is intentionally leaving key details out until a formal report has been completed.
If you research Ring's encryption methods, the general consensus is that it's very solid, and that's an accurate consensus. It uses the standard AES-128 symmetric encryption between the camera and Ring servers. Encryption is typically really foolproof, but as a company releases more products with new components, firmware updates, services, app updates, and protocols, and some of their staff move on, the odds for mistakes in how that encryption is implemented starts becoming more likely. So let me be very clear here before telling you about this. I worked for weeks on virtually nothing but this exploit, and it's by far the most challenging hack that I've ever done. And the reason I did it is because I not only learned a lot about encryption, but I learned a whole lot about how video and image compression and decoding work on cameras and computers, which is very much in my wheelhouse. This definitely is not something that your typical law enforcement agency would do. It's much easier to get a warrant. To give you a very quick and broad rundown of how it worked, I cloned a secure Wi-Fi network with one of these. I used a couple different libraries to pollute the secure layers and then reroute the connections to a dummy layer. Then all of the data was running to and being captured by a third router, which was then sending data back to the original router. And then I painstakingly analyzed hundreds of megabytes of utter nonsense, paying close attention to little changes that happened during intermittent times where I rerouted the traffic. And I spent a few days and a few thousand trial and error sessions building an algorithm that could rebuild the images from the leaked raw data packets. And I was able to get this. And this.
I was planning on not sharing the scripts or details with anyone, but after I posted a selfie from the packets, Ring reached out to my management and asked me to submit information to their bug bounty program so they could fix it and ensure that I received appropriate recognition and compensation. It's kind of refreshing to see a company take something like this so seriously in comparison to my previous experience of Flock Safety responding to vulnerabilities by sending unsolicited emails to law enforcement agencies telling them that they were under attack by lawless activists.
I rarely do sponsored content, but when I do, it's a product or service that I personally use, and any profits from that sponsorship go to charity. Ground News breaks down news stories by independently audited factuality, bias, location, and ownership. To put it plainly, Ground News is a solution to a dangerous habit that many of us have, where we just open up Google News or Apple News or our Instagram feed or whatever, and learn about the world through the lens of the same billionaires who donated money to Donald Trump's ballroom. Let's find some news. Here we go. Senate Democrats defeat amendment to require photo ID to vote. Let's see how your MAGA uncle will read that article. Senate Democrats on Thursday blocked a common sense amendment that would have required voters to Let's see how your blue-haired sister-in-law will read that article. U.S. Senate turns down photo ID requirement for voting, slammed by Dems as theatrics. I guess that's not really that dramatic. And then, of course, my favorite, the blind spot, which I find really humorous, but is also actually really useful for me. I don't usually read right-wing publications because I'm not really that into fascism, believe it or not. There's a Maryland bill that would mandate putting tampons in men's bathrooms. I also don't give a shit. Let's see what the right-wing media readers are missing. Apparently, they didn't find out that oil prices are on the rise yet. Finally, as usual, any profit that this channel makes off of the sponsorship will go to UNICEF Ukraine. Anyway, if you want to check this out, you can subscribe to get 40% off of the Vantage plan by scanning this QR code or using my link, ground.news/Ben.
It's about time to wrap this up. I hope you learned something, and if you want to get involved and help keep the lights on throughout all the controversial research projects I'm doing this year, my Patreon gives you access to everything from field recordings to plugins that allow you to control synthesizers with live stock charts. What's a lot more fundamentally useful than that is a huge, incredibly vibrant community of like-minded folks, and unlike everything else in the world right now, you can sign up for as little as $1. Thanks for watching. Keep creating. Bye.